Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Change Your Mind podcast, where we explore personal development, spirituality, and science. I'm your host, Chris Ashley. I'm incredibly excited for my guest today because she backs everything up with science. And if you've been listening to my show long enough, you know that I love that because we are living in this amazing time where science backs up personal development and spirituality. So I can't wait to pick her brain. First, a couple quick announcements. Head over to the links in the show notes. You're going to find ways to connect with my amazing guest, ways to connect with me, ways to sponsor the podcast. You'll find a link to my book, Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality. It was endorsed by Bob Doyle, Marcy Shimoff, Michael Beckwith, all three of whom were in the film The Secret. It was endorsed by John Gray, who wrote Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, Anita Morjani, who wrote Dying to Be Me, so come check it out. You'll also find links to free downloads, to my courses, to just all sorts of goodies. And let's see, what else? As always, this is part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network. We are doing amazing things in the personal development realm. We have live events almost every month. I was just on stage with Les Brown, Dr. Joe Vitale, Jim Quick, Joseph McClendon. So come be a part of it. All the podcasts are amazing. The events are amazing. They're hosted by this amazing woman named Mary, who was Tony Robbins' executive vice president of production for 18 years. So she's the real deal. We're changing the world. Come be a part of it. What if the one thing keeping you stuck is the way you think? Welcome to Change Your Mind with Chris Ashley, the podcast where science meets spirituality and mindset becomes your most powerful tool for transformation. I'm Chris Ashley, author of Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality, trainer, speaker, and lifelong seeker. For years, I battled trauma, depression, anger, chronic illness, low self-worth, and the weight of old stories. Until I discovered how to rewire my mind, reconnect with my divine nature, and consciously create a new reality from the inside out. This show is here to help you do the same. Each week, we explore the intersection of personal development, spirituality, and science, diving into topics like healing, emotional mastery, entrepreneurship, resilience, and the quantum nature of reality. You'll hear powerful stories, gain practical tools, and real conversations that will help you change your perspective, get unshakable confidence, and live the vision your soul has always known is possible. Whether you're navigating a major life shift, building your dream business, or seeking deep healing and alignment, you're in the right place. So if you're ready to break through, take back your power, and create a life on your terms, this is your moment. Let's break free from the patterns that hold us back, awaken to who we truly are, and rise. Your transformation starts now. All right, with all that said, I have with me Ravinder Taylor, and I'm so excited you're here. So, Ravinder is president of Progressive Awareness Research, Inc., and the co-author of over 200 personal motivation audio programs and 2 books. For the past 30-plus years, Ravinder has been researching and analyzing how our minds work and what makes us who we are. Her interest in this area goes beyond academics, as her focus is always on how we can use this information for personal development. So welcome, Ravinder. I'm so happy you're here with me.
Hi, Chris. Thank you so much for having me on. I look forward to a fun conversation.
Me too. I always start my episodes off the same way, and that is by asking my guests, what is their origin story? So what is it that put you on this path to want to research, we're going to get into it, but all of this personal development and ways to kind of hack your mind?
That's kind of a big question there, Chris. You talk about the origin story. I was born in India, brought up in England. There's a whole bunch of experiences that have helped me become the person that I am. My interest in the power of the mind, I think I've always had some interest. I've always had those questions about who am I? What is reality? What does this all mean? I remember thinking about that stuff when I was 5 or 6. But it was when I was working in a path lab that we had a special presentation being offered by the hospital to all the doctors and nurses, and that was on a hypnosis, which at the time I always thought was for entertainment only. It was a bit of a joke. You know, I didn't take it seriously, but the lecture was fascinating. I got to learn. There was a particular story that he shared about this woman who had a pain in her arm. She'd had a pain in her arm for like 10 years. Seen all the doctors, all the specialists, couldn't find a solution to it. And under hypnosis, they did the regression, went back and found the trigger point for this. And it turned out to be some emotional event that she had repressed and put down, but it had resulted in the pain in her arm. And with the information, with just that coming to light, the pain went away right away. And I found that fascinating. I then underwent hypnotherapy myself, experienced some fascinating processes like hypnotic drawing, hypnotic writing, did a course in hypnosis. I did a 3-year training in hypnosis and psychotherapy, and the rest is just history. I just carried on learning more.
Amazing. That's such an, it's so fascinating, the power of our mind and how emotions that we suppress or regress can actually turn into illness. Like it's pretty wild, actually. So I guess like when we're talking about like rewiring the brain and starting to like find all of these repressed emotions, like where do we even start? How do we like, is all illness from repressed emotions? Like how do we know we're repressing emotions?
I wouldn't say all illness is due to repressed emotions, but when you have that mindset, when you're thinking through those avenues, then it opens up information to you. It opens up possibilities. So no, not all of it is created in the mind. Some of it most certainly is. We have this technique that we use around here you ask yourself, what am I benefiting from being sick? Now, that's a really hard question. And I want to say, Chris, we're very much into self-care, be gentle with yourself. It's not about guilt. It's not about shame. It's not about dumping stuff on other people or on yourself. But when you ask yourself, what am I gaining from this? Then some interesting ideas can come to the surface. I have my own experience with that exactly. After my youngest son was born, I was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. I took aboard all of these techniques. It was a very difficult time for me. My son was 3 months old and I was having problems changing his diaper because I couldn't hold his legs up with my left hand to slip the diaper underneath. My shoulder just wouldn't work. And the thought of that when you're a new mom is just really challenging. But I incorporated all the techniques that I cover in my book, Mind Training. I used everything I could think of. I'm very much a kitchen sink approach kind of person. But I looked at the responsibility side of it. And the beauty of this is you don't have to share this information with other people. You can do this by yourself. And when you do it by yourself and you allow those random thoughts to come up, yeah, there's going to be lots of ideas that come up that are garbage. But amongst that garbage, the truth can emerge. So I did all of that work. I also worked on boosting up my own ability to heal. When you believe you have the ability to heal yourself, well, that enhances everything. You know, if you believe in the mind-body connection, for me, when I'm prescribed medications, I'm always prescribed the smallest dose. It's like, I don't need a lot. I don't take a lot. We have some inner talk subliminal programs that work at programming your self-talk. It goes a whole lot deeper than positive affirmations. And we can talk about that later on if you wish to. For 15 months, I inundated my mind with affirmations, subliminal affirmations that said I could heal myself. I looked at all the underlying causes for why I may have triggered this in myself. And then I came across a supplement that supposedly was having good results. The supplement is freely available on Amazon now. It's, you know, it's just like any other supplement. Other people aren't reporting that it cures rheumatoid arthritis. But I took this supplement twice a day for 2 weeks, and my RA basically cured itself. So there is lots of, I don't know if it's a supplement that did it, or for me, it just took taking the supplement that was the placebo that worked for me to tip me over the edge to heal myself. But I did.
Yeah, I love that story. So can I ask a personal question? Like, what did you come up with that you were gaining from being sick, from being injured?
In my instance, it wasn't what I was gaining. There was an element, just like the story I said at the beginning, this woman who had a pain in her arm. The subconscious works in interesting ways. So it can help you avoid pain. It wants to protect you from pain. And sometimes it will do that. Or, you know, pain isn't just physical pain. It can be shame and guilt as well. And so it can do some of these things, you know, like cause these random pains or cause illnesses just to remind you not to go down that avenue again. As I said, the subconscious mind works in weird ways. But for me, there was guilt because I'd always wanted a girl. My oldest is a boy. This pregnancy was totally different. You know how they often say if you carry the baby high, it means this, or if you carry it low, it means that, you know, all of those things. And these two pregnancies were polar opposites. I was convinced it was a girl. I had a relationship with this girl in my mind. You know, this girl was alive in my mind. I held her in my mind. And then my son was born. And the second, you know, there was that split second when they said it was a boy. And then my love just exploded. This was my son. It was welcome, William. You know, it was my baby. But in the back of my mind, I had this guilt about this daughter that I had that hadn't been born. And was I betraying her? Was I betraying my son even in thinking that? I was true Mama Bear. You know, I loved my son. Absolutely. I would have killed anybody with my bare hands if they tried to hurt him. No question about it. But I did have this guilt about, you know, the fact that I thought about this girl that wasn't born, or, you know, was I betraying her? You know, there was conflict. There was conflict. And that's often what happens when there's conflict. That's when we have problems, when there's subconscious conflict. That can often cause problems in our current lives.
Yeah, thank you so much for being so vulnerable and sharing all of that. I mean, it totally makes sense, especially when you think about the fact that it was in your shoulder, and you, like, that would affect how you could hold him, right? It literally translates to, like, you're having trouble, like, holding him. And it's just so incredible, the power of the mind. And I want to go back to what you were saying before, like, what do you get out of it? You know, and someone might kind of scoff at that, but as someone who has a very sick mother, like basically spent 15 years in bed because of trauma that both her and I went through. That's my story that I tell all the time. And I made the choice to heal and she made the choice to stay sick. It's like you can get out of things that you don't want to do, like school or work, right? You can get sympathy or pity from others. You can get money from the government in some cases. But like the one that, and I'm reading, like, because I literally write this in my book, and I love that you said it. It's like you can get revenge or to be right by making someone else wrong. And it's like people don't think about, and you're nodding because you know. And like when I first read that or heard that, that like blew my mind, because it's so true in my mom's case, and it's so true in so many people's case, that it's like, it's almost like a I told you so. Like it's this victim mentality. And you're nodding, so I'd love for you to just like talk about that for a moment.
No, you're absolutely correct with everything that you say there. Our minds are really, really powerful. You know, we do have the ability to heal ourselves or hurt ourselves. We have the ability to be successful or to sabotage things. We have the ability to have good relationships or, you know, the ability to ruin them all. And it's all right there in our minds, in our subconscious mind. We have a whole lot of information. A great deal of science has been done, a great deal of research looking at the subconscious mind, and they've actually demonstrated that there's activity in your subconscious mind before you make a choice. So there's three different kinds of experiments that were done, you know, different people, different times. Started in the 80s under Benjamin Libet, went on, I think, in 2013 with Itzhak Fried. But they were looking at the activity in the subconscious mind before you make a choice. And the type of experiments they did was, you know, are you going to choose to press the button with your right hand or your left hand? So there were very simple choices. And so you were aware when you made the choice, but a technician looking at the information could predict your choice up to 7 seconds ahead.
Wow.
So this information is coming from your subconscious mind. Your subconscious mind is a repository of all of your experiences, everything that you've learned, every shame, guilt. And we have a bias towards the negative side. Bad has a whole lot more power than good has. So those things are the things that are going to take long-term homes in our subconscious mind. And that is what feeds what we do. That's going to influence everything that we do. And it just goes forward. So a huge part of mind training is in reprogramming the subconscious mind, taking control of how it gets programmed. You know, you learn how the brain works, you learn how it takes in information, and then you can be a whole lot more observant of the world around you and the information that you are intaking without having any awareness of it at all. You just take conscious control over it. You could either be a puppet with somebody else pulling your strings, and that's, you know, that's not necessarily, you know, a bad guy trying to manipulate you, although there is a great deal of manipulation that goes on. All of this research going on around the world that shows what makes us tick, who do you think is using that information the most?
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. It's going to be the politicians, the advertisers, the marketers. They're going to be using it. So there is negative programming going on very deliberately. Fear sells, especially in politics. Fear is going to win out every single time.
And the news.
Yep. It's all the same thing these days, isn't it, Chris?
It is. So I do want to talk about how to rewire, but first I have a question based on like what you just said. So like, you know, we all feel emotions, right? Like part of being a human is feeling emotions, and we don't want these things to get repressed. And we're constantly getting hit with like all these trillions of pieces of information. So like, how do we make sure that something doesn't stick? Like, how do we make sure that like you felt that guilt or shame for like a split second, but you probably weren't even aware of it really, right? To the point where they're like, oh, this is affecting me. So how do we make sure that we're not setting ourselves up for sabotage and hurting ourselves?
Some of these things are going to happen anyway. You can't protect against everything because then you wouldn't live. You know, our brain, there's different ways people think about how the brain works. And Kahneman talks about the system one and system two thinking. System one is going to be the instinctive way of thinking. You just respond, your subconscious provides you the answers, you just respond right away. You don't think about, you know, all the advantages and disadvantages to everything. You just make your choices. System two thinking is where you think things through more clearly. So the best that we can do is to do more of the system two kind of thinking. So when it comes to manipulation by the news, the media, all of that kind of stuff, well, having a full grounding in some of the compliance principles. there are things there that will just press our buttons regardless. So an example of that, they did some research and they showed that if you're in a restaurant and the waitress is wearing red, you'll give her a bigger tip. It's not everybody individually. This is, you know, this is across the numbers, but the waitress in red will get more. And it's not only from the men, it's from the women as well. So they are learning all of these techniques. And when you're aware, you have to be, you don't have to know all the specific techniques because there are so many of them. But you have to have a good grounding in these techniques exist and people are going to use it against me. It can be done deliberately by the salesman, you know, the politician, whatever. Or it can just be done by the person who is a natural salesman, you know, Uncle Fred, who always gets his own way. He just has the right way of communicating. When you're aware of these techniques, it gives you that pause, that just that split second moment of, I wonder what's going on. And it takes away that automatic response so they don't pull your strings quite so quickly. You can stop and think. And when you wear that different kind of hat, that different way of thinking, then things just don't reach you in the same way.
Yeah, it makes me think of NLP, what you're saying, neuro-linguistic programming, because so much of that is manipulation for better or for worse, right? If you're trying to sell something or if you're trying to like really control someone. So like understanding those little, even like body language can really, once you know it, you can like, you see it, right? You see it in action, like glaringly obvious.
And you can cancel it out. So if you've got if you're talking to someone and you pick up on, oh, this person's trading NLP, look, they're matching me, they're pacing me, they're leading me. You know, once you're aware of that, then you can make a change. You can take the control back again. You yeah. don't have to. It's like, okay, they're smiling at me, they're nodding, they're agreeing with me. Hang on, let me stop and think about this. Just because someone's agreeable doesn't make them my friend.
Yeah, totally. And that's what they're good at, right? Is making you feel really seen and important. And yeah, it's very manipulative. Because that's what we all want. We all want love, right?
I'm glad you acknowledge that though, Chris. I've not found many people who think of NLP as being manipulative, but I do. I do, exactly. It's like, I don't, yeah, that just doesn't, that's not the kind of friend that I want.
Well, it's a tool, right? And just like any tool, it depends on the intention behind the user, right? So you can use it for good or you can use it for bad.
I prefer techniques that are more upfront. I can handle hypnotherapy. You know exactly what you're going for. You know what they're going to do. You understand the process. You're not being tricked into something. So that's right. Just my personal preference, though. So yeah, I just appreciated hearing you describe NLP as manipulative.
Yeah. So I want to talk a little bit about how do we rewire the brain? You know, there's so many people out there with methods from like meditation to journaling to hypnosis. And I'd love to just hear your take on it, especially because so much of your work is science backed.
It is indeed. And all of those techniques that you just mentioned are science backed too. The rewiring of the brain comes from when you start to understand where these connections come from. One of the things that I talk about in mind training is I talk about Erik Erikson's 8 stages of development. So he actually goes through, you know, from birth to 1.5, 1.5 to 3, all the things that you are supposed to learn in those areas. And that's a good thing to look back at when you're experiencing something in your life today and you want to say, why do I always do that? Well, when you look at his framework, that gives you somewhere to go look to try and find what some of these answers are. There's some fascinating research. There was something that that I came across, they were looking at the bonding of an infant child to its primary caregivers, its mom, its dad, whatever. And looking at the degree of bonding, they were able to predict the number of friends or the kind of friends that the person would have in high school or the kinds of relationships they would have in early adulthood. They could predict that just from how well the infant was bonded to its primary caregiver, because you have a good, strong bond if the baby can trust that the primary caregivers are going to take care of it. Well, it opens them up to experiences, opens them up to developing good, solid relationships later on. And I look back at some of this, and I was looking at, you know, the in school, and it's like, okay, that's where my insecurities and inadequacies came from. I was always bottom of the pile at this particular time. Now I look back at it, you can look back at that. And you can make that change. You talk about rewiring the brain. We have these things that are going on automatically. We have these automatic pairings that go on. For me, I could look back at that period of time, look at the comments that some of the people made that made me feel so inferior. And I look at them now and it's like, well, that was dumb. I'm not inferior to them, you know, we're all in the same boat here. There isn't any difference here. But bringing it down to, you know, the types of goals that we can all have, you know, maybe we want to lose weight or we want to change a habit or something. When it comes to that rewiring, you can look back and say, well, why do I always have that craving for a piece of cake after a really stressful day? Mm-hmm. This used to be, you know, a personal one of mine. I like chocolate cake. I've always loved chocolate cake.
Well, it's delicious.
it is indeed. But then when you think back and you realize that as a child, maybe whenever you were upset, mom bought out chocolate cake for you or gave you a treat. You know, whatever your preferred treat, that can change. But our parents frequently would give us treats when we're hurt, when we're upset, when we've done well and we deserve something, you know, we've performed well or done something like that. And that pairing goes on. So when you're rewiring the brain, you want to change that pairing. And the first step comes in having an awareness of it. And so looking back at the different stages of development gives you somewhere to look, and then you can change the pairing going forward. You know, you don't have to succumb to that when you realize that's where it came from. That's one of the beauties of this, Chris, is once you realize the source of a problem, it frequently just disappears by itself.
That's what I was going to ask. Like, just does the knowledge of it and the awareness of it, does that do enough? Or do you kind of have to take it out and then like replace it with something? And just on the infant thing, I have a 13-month-old. So I'm like constantly, anytime anyone says anything about babies, I'm like thinking about it. Like when you're talking about a baby being bonded, is it like they're not being like left alone to cry it out kind of thing? Or, you know, like how do we as parents like help our children develop good attachment and set them up for success and a happy life?
You know, that is not my area of professional expertise.
All right, fair
I'm
enough.
A mother. I have my children. I have those ideas. There are people that will believe in allowing a child to cry it out because they can learn to self-soothe. I didn't do that. I think the best thing, that the advice I always give to new parents is follow your instincts. The fashions, the trends out there, you should do this, you shouldn't do that, they change so drastically. I mean, they can be huge. The important part, and when we're talking about the bonding between the baby and the primary caregivers, is, you know, can the child trust that you're gonna be there? So no, if my son cried, I would go and pick him up. And I wouldn't only pick him up. That was one of the other things too. When you've got a small child, you're always told, well, you have to take care of yourself. If they're sleeping, you walk to sleep and all of that. And with my oldest son, that created some tension for me, because then if my child woke up too soon, I wasn't fully rested. I wasn't, you know, there could be that little bit of, I haven't had time to take care of myself. I did it totally different with my second son. If he woke up, I was joyous. I had joy in my heart that I got to hold him again. I got joy in my heart in being able to pick him up and for his tears to stop right away. So you're talking about bonding. I think that is a whole lot more important than following the other rules. You do what you feel is right. You know, you're going to understand your child a whole lot better. You're going to understand your own needs a whole lot more. I was able to do that without feeling deprived. It was good. It was really good.
I love that answer. And you framed it by saying that this isn't your professional expertise area, but like, you're a mother. So yeah, it is, right? Like, it's all of our professional expertise. And I agree with you totally. I have that feeling too, like when I get him in the middle of the night, and even if I'm like up for a couple hours in the middle of the night and I'm tired, it's like, as soon as I go back to bed and lay down, I just feel like so much gratitude that I was able to like be there for him and like give him what he needed and make him feel safe and happy.
It's a beautiful experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. The advice I would give you, Chris, is just enjoy every second of it. They grow up too fast. And I'm sure you've heard that from lots of people. I heard it from lots of people. I wish I'd taken it to heart a whole lot more, because it is, the whole process is magical. Every age is magical. They're all special. So, you know, the sleepless nights, that's easy now.
Yeah. It is magic. It's my favorite thing I've ever done. So let's go back to, you know, rewiring your brain. I'd love for you to just talk a little bit about like neuroplasticity and how we can really change our habits and change our minds.
Neuroplasticity really comes down to your ability to learn. When you're young, when you're small, it's easy. As you get older, certain habits get entrenched. They become the system one thinking that Kahneman's talking about. They just get paired off automatically. And so you stop thinking about it. So neuroplasticity as an adult, it's like working out, you know, doing exercises. What you can do easily when you're young, well, you have to work harder at it when you're older. But that doesn't mean it's not possible. You know, I've heard of people doing a marathon when they're 100, or they start bodybuilding in their 60s and they achieve all of these things. You can do that, and you can do the same thing with your mind too. A really encouraging part, you want some really good incentive to open yourself up and do all of these things. It is the gratitude, it is the journaling, it is the mindfulness. It's about thinking, you know, when you put all of these things into practice. There was a research study that I came across that I loved, because it was just, it brings so much hope. When you're older, one of the things that you start thinking about is dementia and Alzheimer's. You know, that's the worst kind of dying in my mind.
Yeah.
Is to go down that avenue. But this particular research study I was looking at, they were looking at nuns, and they looked at the journals that the nuns kept. And then after the nuns passed away, they did autopsies and looked at the brains. And what they found is the nuns who were the most positive, the most active, the most grateful, you know, these kinds of attributes, their brains could be full of Alzheimer's plaque. But they never expressed themselves, because they were so engaged in life. They were so connected in life. So when we're talking about plasticity and rewiring the brain, you can stop and look at yourself now. There are some people who are naturally optimistic, and there are some people who are naturally pessimistic. There are so many advantages to being optimistic. They have looked at so much research. You know, when you're optimistic, you will actually experience fewer stressful events. It's not that the world changes. The world doesn't change. You just don't succumb to the stress. It doesn't express itself as being stressful. When you're optimistic, your chances of dying from cancer, from infections, from everything just drops drastically. It is huge. When you're optimistic, you're going to have better relationships, better financial success. It goes across the board. So you can change that. So if you're a naturally pessimistic person and you want to change that wiring, well, start incorporating some mindfulness. Listen, pay attention to your thoughts and don't accept them automatically. If you've got something coming up and you are dreading it, and so that, you know, that self-talk that goes around our minds all the time, you know, that constant churning around for a pessimistic person is going to be very, very negative. Well, you can stop and say, what would happen if that worst possible scenario didn't happen? What would it look like if the worst possible didn't happen? That puts enough of a brake on it to be able to open up other possibilities. And then if you can take it a step further and start imagining what it would be like if the worst possible thing didn't happen, but in fact the best possible option came out of it. When you start imagining that, I'm not talking about the law of attraction, because, I mean, there are kernels of truth in there, but lots of people take that way too far. But the kernels of truth in that just come that when good things come to you, you see them, as opposed to being oblivious to them. We're in a world of balance, in my mind. We all experience good things. We all experience bad things. They're going to be pretty equal. Things happen. Bad things happen to good people. Good things happen to bad people. But if you can find that place of balance for yourself so that you're not buried in the negative and the pessimistic kinds of attitudes, you can rewire those responses so you start picturing positive outcomes and you practice those. And the more you practice those, they've actually demonstrated this. People who were encouraged to write down in their journal your gratitude, you know, express positive things that had happened to them, they looked at it 6 weeks down the highway. And as I said, they found that they experienced fewer stressful events. They've done this over much longer term situations too. They just experience a whole lot less. So you want a good future, it starts today. Start paying attention to your thoughts. Understand that your mind is powerful, and what you focus on is what you're feeding into that long bag of subconscious knowledge that will be where you answer out of instinct.
You're totally speaking my language. I love everything you just said. I talk about very similar things in my own book. And I, you know, when you were talking about it, it made me think about, or like the Alzheimer's thing, it made me think about how like we all have cancer cells in us all the time. And some people's immune system just takes care of it. I mean, our immune system's supposed to take care of it. And some people it doesn't. And so much of it is like your ability to like believe, or you believing in your ability to heal, kind of like your story in the beginning where you took a supplement and you're like, I don't know if it was the placebo effect, but it worked because I decided it was going to work. And then it also is making me think, like, the people I know in my life who just complain endlessly, like maybe they're not even pessimistic, but they're just like negative, which I guess is kind of a synonym, but it's just like there's always something to complain about. Like it's like bad stuff keeps happening to them, right? And it's like, wow, how much bad stuff can happen to a single person? But it's like there's always something to just like bitch about, right? Versus like you said, bad things happen to everyone, like quote unquote bad things, but like what I've noticed for like myself is like, I see like the potential of like growing from everything, right? Like everything is a lesson, being really growth minded. Like, okay, how can I level up from this? Like, how can I use this to like grow even more? How can I like fail forward from this? Versus like just getting totally sucked into that victim mentality is like what I've found, which is kind of like the same thing you're saying, but I just want to like kind of be like, yes, 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 because I just love everything you just said. I want to ask, you know, some people are really, really successful and others like keep trying and keep trying and like they never quite like break through that, whether it's financially successful or just being successful in their business or personally. So like, what have you noticed, like what good mind hacks or what holds people back from being successful? And like, how can people kind of hack their brain and rewire their brain for success?
You know, there's probably two phrases that we repeat to ourselves frequently that have a huge influence. One is going to be, I can't. I can't do something, you know, I'm not any good at this. I can't do this. I can't do that. When you've got that mindset, you are putting a cap on your ability. That is 100%. When you believe that you cannot be successful, you won't try your hardest at it. You will quit. Doesn't matter how much discipline you put in, you will not try your hardest. I have a story. I'll give you just the brief one. I mean, I experienced this. I used to go biking with my family, and there was one hill that I could not bike up. Period. End of quotation. I've got a great deal of willpower. You know, I'm a strong person. So I would, every day we would go out biking. I'd come to this hill. It's like, I'm going to make that hill this time. And no, the hill basically went up in three inclines. So it went up and then it got steeper and then it got steeper. It's like a third, a third, a third. Then we took our bikes in to be professionally tuned up. And I discovered I'd been riding on my brakes. So now I had something to put it all on. And so the next time I went biking, see what had happened previously, I would do the first third of this hill, okay. And the second I felt the increase in tension as the incline increased, I would stop. And I could not get by there, whatever I did. But now I had the bike tuned up. I could blame it on the brakes. I did the first third like normal. I did the second third and thought, yep, because I'm not riding on my brakes. The last part of it, I worked my butt off, Chris. I worked so hard. I'm not sure, I don't know if you like biking, but when you're biking uphill, you can be pushing with all your might. You're only progressing an inch at a time. You're barely staying balanced, but you keep going. That last third, I put everything. I put every effort I had into it. It was slow going, but I got to the top and it felt great. But listen to the difference in the two stories. Previously, you know, I would stop at a third. I didn't tell you that my leg muscles were aching. I didn't tell you about the stress and the strain. There wasn't any. I quit because I knew I couldn't do it. When I knew I could do it, I worked so hard at it. And imagine that type of mindset across every aspect of your life, whether it's in career or it's in your relationships, whether it's your children, whatever it may be, academics. Imagine how you would feel if you were a third more successful in everything simply because you took away the word, I can't.
You said there were two phrases, I can't and what else?
My mind's drawing a total blank right now, Chris. It just went like it's one of those things. It just kind of disappears. It is the idea that that you can't do something. There is also the other one is going to be the addiction to failure. There are the happy brain chemicals. I'm not sure if you're familiar with those: endorphin, serotonin, oxytocin, dopamine. They're chemicals that are produced by the brain that help you to feel happier, to reach for your goals, to help you achieve things. The addiction to failure, and it also comes into some of the defense mechanisms that we have, or the shortcuts and fallacies, the confirmation bias. That was the one I was trying to go for. Mm. It's to do with you think you're going to fail, or you tell yourself, I always fail at this, and then you fail, and then you get a dopamine hit because the confirmation bias has been demonstrated correct. You were right. You were right. You expected to fail, and you were correct because you failed. So you get a dopamine hit from that. That is part of the addiction to failure cycle.
So that's so fascinating. It reminds me of what we were saying earlier, where like staying sick, you get to prove that you were right and someone else was wrong, right? It's that and you just totally put it into like a science frame for me. That is fascinating that you actually get a dopamine hit from it.
You do. You do. It's like, it's the biggest thing. You have to stop saying, I can't. It helps if you replace it with up until now. Up until now, I haven't been able to. That opens up doors to you. So back to the, you know, the treatment that, you know, what I did with the RA was the supplement I took just a placebo, or had I opened up the avenues in order to allow it to work? Had I stopped blocking myself from healing myself? The mind has this ability to heal. And so I could have had the RA. I could have said, you know, life sucks. I've got this. There's nothing I can do about it. But instead, I opened up the possibility that my mind can heal this. My mind can help me fix this. I've just got to find the correct way to speak to it. I have to stop blocking myself. And that's what self-sabotage can often be as well. You block success from coming to you for whatever reason. So you just start investigating. You understand how the information gets into your mind. You look back into your past to see some of these connections. When you see them, things open up. Things are just, you know, the problems can disappear.
Yeah, totally. Because otherwise it becomes your identity, right? Like you could have been like, I am a person with RA. And then that's your identity and that's your belief system. And just going back to your biking story, because I didn't even say thank you for such a cool story. And I love that at the end, you're like, I didn't say my calves were burning. I didn't say there was anything besides like, I just couldn't do it. And I also love that you said you had to work hard for it, right? It's that piece of like believing in yourself, but also like taking action. And I think that's what is missing in a lot of the law of attraction when people teach it. Because you mentioned earlier, like there's some truths, like the universe isn't a genie in a bottle. It's not going to just drop it into your lap. But like, if you have that North Star, you know what you want, you believe it, and then you take steps towards it, that's when magic happens. And those doors start to open up.
It does. That is when the magic happens, when you believe that you deserve, you stop blocking the stuff from coming. It's not that you're attracting it like a magnet. It's not like, you know, I'm just going to draw money to me, but I can stop blocking it and I can open myself up to the opportunities that are around. There are opportunities there. How often, there's so many times I've been talking to people and they say, I can't do this and I can't do that. That doesn't work for me. That doesn't, you know. And they are putting all of these blocks to their own success. They're putting caps on it, putting limits on it. When you remove that, you have the ability to become your personal best. And that's what mind training is all about to me. It's not about becoming Superman. It's not about becoming magical. It's about achieving my highest best. And we all have different talents and abilities. So I'm not going to turn into Michael Jordan just because I believe I can play basketball. I can't, but it's just a, it's a good example.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to turn me into that. But if I'm interested in playing basketball and I tell myself I can become the best that I can be. And that's all it takes. That's all we want, is to be the best that we can be. And we all have talents and abilities. There are things that we can do better than other people. There are things that, you know, we're not as good at as other people, but it's about achieving our personal best. It's about actualizing ourselves, you know, and from a spiritual perspective, you know, Mind Training isn't a spiritual book, although spirituality peaks out in different places. But that's the best gift that you can give to having the gift of life and having all of these experiences, is to maximize it, become the best version of yourself possible.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of why we're here, right? To grow and evolve and expand. I want to go back to what you were saying about blocking yourself from opportunities. So do you think that there are always countless opportunities around us all the time, but we just like put these blinders on by saying we can't, or by like giving ourselves these ceilings?
Absolutely. There are always opportunities there. Sometimes it takes more creativity than others. That's all. But if you're telling yourself you can't, if you're telling yourself that you don't deserve it, or you've always failed, then when an opportunity is there, you're going to deny it. You're going to deny it, or you're not even going to see it. You're not going to see it for the opportunity that it is. There are always things that we can do. Got to take that with a little bit of a pinch of salt, Chris. I want to remember that I'm talking to people in the Western world. We are blessed. There are places in the world, they don't have the blessings that we have. So I'm not ignoring that. I'm speaking to a particular audience. And that is the audience who already has lots of the basic, compared to some people in the world. They already are in paradise, but they want to achieve more. They want to do better than that. So, you have to be very cautious how we express some of those things. There are awful things going on in the world, and I think for me, America, this whole idea of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, I think free people have an obligation to help others become free.
Mm.
So, but that's a whole different conversation. I'm just, you know, I don't want anyone to think that I'm being blasé about, oh, there's always opportunities. So the person starving in Ethiopia, you know, they're just not looking. No, I'm not saying that whatsoever. This is a very personal journey. It's where I am. It's about how I can become a better person. And it's about the people that I talk to and helping them become better and achieve more. I'm not making any comments, casting any judgments. I am not one of these people who thinks we are right where we should be. So that person who has these big traumas or suffers, well, they deserve it because of some karmic whatever. I don't do that stuff. That's not my cup of tea at all. I'm just about, you know, doing what I can for the people around me. And if I can do something better for the rest of the world, I'll do what I can.
So going back to, you know, career opportunities or this pursuit of success, if someone is finding themselves constantly blocked, but you know, they're like, I'm a positive person, I'm visualizing all these things, like, what's the next step? Do they try to think back using that framework you were talking about? If there's some trapped emotion, or like how does someone listening navigate that? They're like, okay, you know, I, you know, every time I try to build a business, it fails. Or every time I try to, and apart from like redoing their language, obviously, I'm just trying to like give you the example. Like, what's someone's first step to try to uncover the root of everything. Does that make sense?
You've got lots of different examples. Yeah, it makes perfect sense that you've just covered a really wide area there. When you are constantly trying and constantly failing at the same thing, it can be business success, it can be relationships, it can be, you know, if you're constantly failing, then you have to look at self-sabotage. So you have to look at what ideas is it that you have in your mind that cause you to fail? Are you quitting too soon? Are you so determined to do it your way because you think this particular way is the only way and this is what a relationship should look like? Or I don't deserve relationships, so this is the kind of relationship I'm constantly going into. When you find yourself repeatedly in those situations, then yes, you want to look towards self-sabotage. You want to ask yourself why you're doing this. And it may be that you want to broaden your horizons. If it's a job and you just can't find a job, maybe you're being too specific about what it is that you want to do. You just want to broaden. Think about it. The whole purpose of self-help and personal development, Chris, is all about being happier. And there's not only one path to being happy. It's not only I need a job in this career, in this. I actually had someone come to us once. They were they had decided they wanted to change job, and they were very proud of the fact that they had a list of all the things that they wanted, and they had a long list. It was a piece of paper just full of, I want to be respected, I want to earn enough, I want to have lots of friends, I want to, and it just went on and on and on and on and on. And you have to say, well, what are you bringing to the job? It isn't all about you. What are you giving? Maybe you want to change your mindset from what I get to what I give. The more you give to other people, the more you get. And that's one of the reasons why optimistic people can be more successful in all of these different areas. When you're smiling, you are more attractive. People are attracted to you. You get seen more. You get noticed more. There's all of these different factors that come into place. So maybe there's just different avenues. You just want to broaden your horizons. And also think about why you constantly repeat the same mistakes again. So what is it that you're doing? When you take self-responsibility, now again, this is for our specific audience. When you take self-responsibility and you say, why am I doing this to myself? It opens up doors of possibilities. It opens up places. When a problem in your life is somebody else's fault, there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
You can't change somebody else. But when you say, I'm part of this equation, I am, you know, what is it that I am doing? Then doors open up. You know, maybe you'll keep working away with the wrong people. You want to change the people around you. Maybe you are surrounded by people who, this is kind of a common clique that you can have with men and women, where they're constantly talking badly about the opposite sex. Husbands always do this. You can't rely on them. They don't understand. Men don't, blah, 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 blah. When you think that way, do you think you're going to attract a guy who is going to be supportive of you? If you think all men are that way, you're not going to see the good guy, and vice versa. So I don't go down those means. I think those jokes against husband and wives, sometimes they're funny, but I don't think they're healthy.
Yeah, I really love that answer. And my favorite thing that you just said is you have to take it off of you and think about, like, how can I give? How can I serve? Because when you're in that mindset, I don't know, there's something magical about the universe. When you're giving, you get back, right?
You do indeed. It Everything feels richer. Everything is more peaceful when you focus on how you can help other people. And we can help other people all the time, even if it's just holding a door open for somebody or smiling at someone. You know, I can remember instances where maybe I saw someone smile and the smile was so genuine that it lifted my soul. And that can just be something really small as smiling. So when you smile at other people, you spread some joy. When you are smiling and you're approachable, you know, you're helping other people feel good, and you will get that feedback. You will get that feedback from them as well. And that helps you feel good.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate everything you shared. I know there's probably so much more we could get into. An hour flew by. And I'm sure people listening want to know where they can find you online, how they can connect with you, where they can get your book. So if you want to just take a moment and share all your stuff.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. The book is Mind Training, The Science of Self-Empowerment. You can buy that anywhere books are sold. If your bookstore doesn't have it, they can order it. You can get it online, Amazon, Barnes, all the big bookstores in the UK, wherever. You can find more about me just by going to my website. That is ravindataylor.com. So that's R-A-V for Victor, I-N-D for dog, E-R, Ravinda. RavindaTaylor.com. If you read the book, if you've enjoyed the discussion here, I'd love to hear back from you. And you can email me directly simply at Ravinda@RavindaTaylor.com. Keeps it very simple.
Awesome. And all of that's going to be in the show notes too. So if you're driving right now, don't try and write it down. You can always come back. Thank you again so much. It's been such a pleasure to just hear your insights, and I just appreciate the work you're doing in the world. If you're listening, like, comment, share, subscribe, send this to someone you think could benefit from it. And yeah, let's all help lift humanity up. Thank you all so much. Have a beautiful rest of your day.